end to have that kind of foot quickness and that good vision.
And the other thing he is durable. He has averaged more carries per game than any back in the NFL over the last 3.5 years. Wide open and a flick into the end zone by Jerome Simpson. Oh, goodness.
You're listening to Shift the Shore Radio.
I'm officially retiring from the NFL and Green Bay Packers. And
Shore Radio.
What's going on, everybody? Beautiful Thursday night. As usual, it is the Zidman reporting live from Miami. It's about as south as you can get. And we have a lot to talk about. It's interesting. The NFL is just about to end. Well, at least the regular season is. And the NBA is just starting. And it's a lot of sports going around. And, you know, it's good to have, you know, it's not good to have one sport come to a close, which is really nice heating up now, the NFL. But at least we can transition to another sport right afterwards, so you don't have any dead air, dead time. And just we're going to talk about on the show tonight, we're going to have the first half be about basketball. And a lot of teams, both teams have played about 2-3 games so far. And just, you know, discuss what's happened so far. It's way too early to discuss anything. And, yeah, I'll be talking about basketball to start the show off. And then I'll end the show with NFL. And I have a bunch of plays for you guys tonight. Have an extended stat of the week coming up at half the hour. And also, I will have the top three Heat plays of the year so far. They only played 3 games, but definitely some exciting plays also. And I'll be talking about just how some teams are starting off. You know, it's hard to say how teams really are so far. It's only 3 games in. But you know what? It's definitely worth discussing and just seeing how they're playing. And we'll, you know, I'll try to, you know, evaluate how it's going to really play into the rest of the season. But a lot of basketball to be played. And coming at the end of the show, I will have the top 10 NFL plays. So my second half will be NFL. And I hope to have Evil Rob on the air today to start things off, talk a little bit of NHL. I never really talk about it. One, because I just don't watch it that much. And you know, I could talk a little bit about it, you know, the standings and whatever, but, you know, there's a lot to discuss in young sports, and I feel if I don't know the sport well enough, which I, you know, I just don't watch it, so I don't know as much as I should. So I actually, like, you know, I talk the truth, man, that's all I do, and that's why I don't talk too much NHL, because I don't really know too much about it. The reason I don't talk about soccer as well, but I'm trying to incorporate in that into my show Evil Rob, who is part of the Dread Sports Talk with Captain Frigid Dread. And his first mate, Ken, he joins that every Tuesday night. And Evil Rob is from New Jersey, and he does watch hockey enough to definitely tell me what's going on. So I'm going to keep going on with the show. He should be calling in any minute. And when I bring him on, we'll talk a little hockey to kick things off. And we do have a caller on the line. Caller, hello.
Hey, what's going on, Todd?
Hey, what's up, Evil Rob?
Hey.
One team I noticed that were, last time I checked, they were third, the Florida Panthers. Would you say they're a surprise team?
Oh, definitely. Well? They were number two. They're number two on my list right behind the Rangers. Because
the
big thing with the Florida Panthers right now is Theodore. Without him, the Panthers are nothing. He's standing on his head. He's doing a whole bunch of crazy stuff in the net. And I think his goals against average is in the low threes.
He's a goalie.
So, yeah, he hasn't really done anything the last few years. He just all of a sudden this year decided, hey, I think I'm gonna play. And that's the big thing. It's like the Rangers have Henrik Lundqvist. The Panthers are my number two surprise team is on the good side. They got Theodore playing great. And my number three team is the Minnesota Wild, who they're the abnormality because Nicklas Backstrom, their main keeper, has been out most of the season. So they're basically, you know, they've been on third string, fourth string goaltenders half the time because they've been, you know, going in and out, and it's amazing how well they're playing too. So those are my like three surprise teams so far.
Yeah, I've heard about the Wild playing good and the Panthers. Yeah, they haven't had a good goalie since Luongo. I remember he was good, but he left quite a while ago. Well, my first question is, what is your favorite team? I was guessing. Maybe the Devils?
Nope, Rangers. The Rangers. Okay. Yep, okay, my favorite team is definitely the Rangers. And the Wild are probably my second favorite, but there's so many teams out there that I don't know the players of. So watching them it's all a learning experience. So because I haven't really been into hockey so much, and all of a sudden, you know, I watch a game on the NHL Network or on Versus, and I'm sitting there looking at these guys going, wow, they're actually pretty good now. And before, like in 2006, when they started back up, I was watching the game saying, okay, who the hell are these guys? Because all the old players that I knew had retired because of the strike. So it's like a new and exciting sport to me again, which makes it great.
Yeah, I used to watch the playoffs, and they were pretty exciting. I actually watched it when the Lightning won. They were like 0-4, I think. So it was fun to watch. It's an exciting sport to watch. I'm just really more of a fan of the scoring sports. Even baseball, they score more often than hockey. But, yeah, that was just my question. Who do you think is the best team so far?
Best team so far, I have to go with Boston Bruins. Now, Tim Thomas in net he's incredible. He's playing the second straight year where he's just almost unscored. You can't score on him. And you need a goaltender like that. Plus, they got a great lineup ahead of them, you know, with Lucic and even Bugard. You know, you'd never think you would say, oh, yeah, he's doing great, but, you know, the guy's doing good. He's scoring goals. He's throwing assists out there. He's having a good year. And, you know, you need players, role players, that you wouldn't even think of to step up in order to be that top-notch team.
Right. No question. I think goalie is the first thing you need. Unless you have a guy like Crosby or something, but. The freaking nation.
Right.
But obviously, like I said, the injuries, I just don't understand. It's been like this in football and hockey all of a sudden. And I asked my dad, I'm like, you know, what do you think's going on? That he just said these guys are just getting bigger and stronger every year. And it's just, you know, I don't know if that's really the reason. Maybe in football for sure. Hockey, stop letting them fight for fun. Because they always do that. And then here's 15 seconds, go have fun. But maybe that needs to stop. Although it is fun, but concussions are not a laughing matter.
You know, you're probably at a good point where the players are bigger and stronger now, and they're much faster, and that's a key thing because the fights aren't really the issue because you don't get you don't see people getting concussions from fights. You see them, you know, breaking their wrists or popping fingers or something like that or getting bloodied up, but not too much of the concussions. Where the concussions are mainly coming from is the head hits, and the NHL is the one sport, the one contact sport that hasn't increased its safety gear in years. Their helmets are still the same plastic helmets that Craig McTavish refused to wear in, you know, the mid and late 90s. There's no padding on them. There's no nothing. Plus, when these players are putting them right into the boards, they're basically sandwiching them between, you got a player skating at 30 miles an hour towards you, and the only thing that you got is to stop you is a piece of plexiglass that your head's hitting. So they're putting the shoulder into the head. The head's hitting the plexiglass. And the only padding you have is a plastic helmet. Come on. You know, something has to be done there. Either eliminate the head hits, start penalizing for that, or get a better helmet that these players can wear. know, the last major safety increase for health, for the head wise was requiring the plastic eye visors, so they wouldn't get, you know, pucks in the eyes anymore, and eliminate a lot of eye injuries that way.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, usually a lot of times people don't change till something big happens, and I think we'll start to see something because the league's not going to allow Crosby to be out like this. So he's
right,
big for the sport.
You know,
he
comes back and he takes a hit from his own player, actually, latest time, and just ran into his own player, and, you know, he's out again. So, you know, when you got the face of the league, it's like having, right now, comparatively speaking, it's like having Wayne Gretzky out a year. Yeah, Peyton Manning out for a year. It's the same thing. It's the face of the league.
Right.
Unlike football, in football there's other stars. In hockey, there's very few huge stars that are just household names. You mentioned Sidney Crosby to, you know, a housewife in the middle of Kentucky, and she knows who you're talking about.
Probably.
You know,
yeah.
You know, you mentioned.
He's like
Christian
the only
Peng,
one. I know of Ovechkin, and that's about it. Malkin. It's like the only three players I can really name off the top of my head. So.
Right. You know, they're household names. And, you know, when you have the face, the Wayne Gretzky of today, you know, I hate to compare, you know, the great one to Sidney Crosby, but that's how he's perceived in the hockey world. And, you know, he's been out for, you know, the entire second half of last year, pretty much the entire first half of this year, and it's not looking good for him coming back at all. So
it's
going to be an interesting end of the season for Pittsburgh.
Cool. All right, well, last question about hockey. I just wanted to – who do you think is going to be in the Stanley Cup Finals if you had to pick two teams? I know it might be tough. The surprising teams are out there. A lot of times they fade off, like you see in the NFL, but who you got?
Well, one, I'm taking the Rangers, not because I'm a fan, but because of history. Because of history. Now, I have a very solid reason for this. So far, the Winter Classic is coming up on January 2nd. Which is a great thing for the NHL right now, and I have a few things I want to say about that before I go. But every year, the team that has lost the Winter Classic has gone on to the Stanley Cup Finals that same year. So the Rangers are probably going to lose, and it's been, here's the exact line. In the four previous years, the away team, not the losing team. The away team went on the Stanley Cup playoffs and ended up losing in the Stanley Cup in the Stanley Cup Finals. All four away teams, the Rangers are the away team, which that's why I say I'm picking the Rangers. Now in the West, I would probably have to go with Chicago. They got the experience. They know they won 2 years ago. They know exactly what they're doing, and there's. You got your surprise in the Wild. I don't know if they can go a full season. And when it gets to playoff hockey, it's a much different game. I don't think that they can hold up. Vancouver's been up there, but there's holes in their game. Chicago, they're just a team that no one's talking about. They're just putting along, and I think they got a serious shot at it. So, and it would be great to see a Rangers-Chicago matchup because it's an Original Six matchup. I love seeing Original Six matchups, especially in the Stanley Cup Finals. But with the Winter Classic, I just want to make a couple quick points on that because there's one thing that has also happened besides the away team. The other team whatever team has worn the dark jersey in the Winter Classic, this happened every year so far, has gone on to win the Stanley Cup Finals, the championship, the following year.
So what exactly is the Winter Classic?
The Winter Classic is a game, it's an outdoor hockey game that moves around from year to year to year. And it was basically because Canada started a game called the Heritage Classic, which was just for the Canadian teams to go, and they would go randomly. So there's only, like, I think, four or five Canadian teams left in the NHL right now. So they would move every year, change a location, so it would kind of spur a little bit more hockey growth in, you know, the biggest hockey country of them all. So the American team said, well, why can't we play in this pool? Well, they tried to do it for years and years and years, or for like 3 or 4 or 5 years, and they couldn't get in. they said, okay, well, let's get our own and call it the Winter Classic. And it's just they just picked two cities that will play in this outdoor arena game, and it's just, it brings huge ratings because they play outdoors in major arenas where, you know, a hockey arena, they'll sit 13,000. They play in, you know, like this year they're playing at Citizens Bank Park where the Phillies play. So they're expecting about between 60 and 80,000 people there. The highest attendance is 71,000. Now, next year they're talking could be at the Big House in Ann Arbor, Michigan, where the Wolverines play, and they're saying that that could go over 100,000. You know, that's a quarter of a season for fans in a normal stadium. So it's great. But, you know, the one thing with the Winter Classic that I don't like, it's a great atmosphere. It's just, you know, because you get the elements, you get, you know, sometimes there's rain, sometimes there's snow, there's, you know, it's playing, it's as close to pond hockey as you can get, and that's how a lot of these guys started, you know, because they come from Minnesota and Maine and Wisconsin, all the cold weather, and even up in Canada, they started playing on the pond when they were, you know, 45 years old. But money talks, and they start, you know, getting a little bit more into the game, and they start skating on real ice, and it's changed. But the one thing that I would like to see change in the Winter Classic is bring the original six teams and let them play head-to-head, just rotate that every year. Keep it the original six, because right now this is the fifth year of the Winter Classic, and Pittsburgh's played twice. Philly, as of this year, will have played twice. The original six teams, including this year with the Rangers, there's only been three original teams, the original six, that have played. You know, Boston was 1 year, Chicago was 1 year, now the Rangers this year. And that's a travesty to me because they're the original six. They're the foundation of the NHL. They need to, you know, if you're going to call something the Winter Classic, make it a true classic matchup. Let the original six, and then, you know, bring the Canadian teams in. Bring Toronto and Montreal in on it. It will bring more ratings, I guarantee it.
Yeah, sure. All right, man. Well, definitely learned a lot more about hockey today. So I should watch the Panthers more often, although I do have the updates on my phone, so I do know the score every night they play. But definitely hope – I'm glad they're doing good. If they're making the playoffs, I'm not going to jump on the bandwagon and go, hey, go Panthers, but I will watch them and not move home. And good luck to your Rangers as well. And I guess that's probably about it. That's all I needed to know about hockey, and I appreciate you calling in and letting my listeners know. Yeah, I should get more hockey on the show. It is one of the four sports that we do watch around America, so I should at least talk a little bit about it every show.
Yeah, I say the same thing every week on my show, and, you know, it never happens. So. And not many people miss it. But it's, you know,
you're right,
there's something that's out there. It is one of the four big sports, and, you know, it should get its due. But, you know, even ESPN kind of sugarcoats it. So, you know, you don't hear anything about hockey anymore now that the NBA started back up. So,
right,
it's all good. Well, Tyler, thank you so much for having me on, and I'll catch you, I guess, sometime in the near future.
All right, thank you, Rob.
Yeah, peace.
Let's talk about the NBA season. You know, a lot of teams, you know, they always have early season projections. This year, the Thunder were projected to be first seed in the West, and, of course, the Heat being the projected favorites in the East. And, you know, I projected that myself. It's not because I'm a Heat fan, you know. I do like the Thunder, but it's just common sense. They were both, you know, maybe the 2-3 teams last year. You know, the only team that was above them was the Mavericks because they beat both of them. But the Mavericks, you know, lost a lot of players getting older. And, you know, you could tell by the beginning of the season that they're just not as good as the Heat or the Thunder. So those are my you know, the obvious preseason projections to make it to the finals and to at least finish the regular season with the best record. And how are those teams doing so far? Well, the Thunder haven't lost yet. They actually won today. I haven't been watching basketball today. I hope it's at work. But the Thunder apparently beat the Mavericks, which is interesting. I just talked about both those teams. And they beat them with a game-winning three. Kevin Durant actually hit a three-pointer at the buzzer to beat the Mavericks 104-102. So it's a big game for both. Thunder get another game. It's, you know, it's a whole other game in a shortened season. That game may be costly. I still don't think they're going to be even close. I think the Thunder are going to have 10 to 15 more wins than the Mavericks themselves. Mavericks, I believe, have not won a game yet, so they're not doing too good. The Lakers got one win so far. They started off 0-2. And it's just interesting, you know, teams, it's not, you know, rocket science. They're just getting old. The Spurs, who have looked good so far, but, you know, they're old. They just haven't got any new players. You have some players hanging around like Tim Duncan, Tony Parker. They've just been in the league for a long time. Lakers are bad. The only young player the Lakers really have that's good is Andrew Bynum. I believe he's 24. And some of these teams are getting old. But, yeah, I think the Thunder are definitely good this year. Talk about the Mavericks really quick. Why are they not, you know, they weren't projected to be the best team last year, but obviously because they won the championship, they kind of proved that they were. So coming into this season, would they be the top dogs projected-wise? No. Why? Well, they lost a bunch of players. J.J. Barea, Rudy Fernandez, Peja Stojakovic, Caron Butler, and Tyson Chandler. J.J. Barea went to the T-Wolves. Rudy Fernandez, Peja Stojakovic retired. Caron Butler went to the Clippers to join that evolving squad over there. And Tyson Chandler went to the Knicks. I'm not sure where Rudy Fernandez went, to be totally honest with you. Wasn't a huge piece of that puzzle. He's definitely a player that they lost that they could probably use back. A good three-point threat. They did get some new players in, but I just don't think that it compares. They got Lamar Odom, Vince Carter, and Delonte West. Obviously, Odom, definitely the biggest part to that. And Vince Carter, just he's getting old. I don't know what he can really bring to the table anymore, but maybe some size and a decent jump shot. He can still shoot threes. Obviously not the Vince Carter that got paid the big bucks that can dunk over everybody. Is he better? Yeah, he's going to get some playing time, but like I said, they lost a lot. J.J. Barea was a huge loss, a point guard that can come off the bench and run faster than anybody on the floor and get layups, hit threes. That guy was to have that guy off the bench and to really spark an offense, they're going to miss that a lot. And they're going to have to learn how to play without him. And like I said, the age, everybody's getting older. And let's talk about the age of the starters. Just to give you guys an idea, Jason Kidd, well, here's the main guys that play. Jason Kidd is 38 years old. Dirk Nowitzki is now 33. Vince Carter is 34. Sean Marion is 33. Lamar Odom is 32. Brendan Haywood is 32. And Jason Terry is 34 years old. So, very old team. You know, this is a young man's sport. This is a lot of speed. It's okay to have, you know, it's great to have a balanced offense, you know, have a few guys that are maybe 33, 34. They bring a lot of experience and teach the younger ones how to play, but these guys are all experienced, and it's just too much. And I think they lost a lot of youth in the offseason, and they really didn't gain any back. So I just don't think – in a shortened season, I would say a shortened season does benefit the older teams because there's less games. And they're not going to get as tired as you. So when they make it to the playoffs, maybe they have an edge. Just a thought. All these teams won't make the playoffs, but I just don't feel. They're not going to maybe not have home field. I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. It's going to be a very interesting year. 66 games is still a lot of games. It's not like 40 games or whatever. It's still about 75% of the season. So definitely it'll still be a fun year. They're condensing all these games. I want to say they play 66 games in 123 days, or it was something like that. So every team has to play three games back-to-back-to-back at least one point in the season. The Lakers are the first team that had to do that, and they did that in the first three games of the year, Christmas Day, the 26th, and the 27th, winning the last one to be 1-3. And speaking of the Lakers, they were without Andrew Bynum for the first four games, and they lost Odom in the trades. So the only big man they really had was Pau Gasol to work along with Bryant. And the other piece of that puzzle, Meta World Peace, I'm sure everybody heard of that, and I think I was a little late to the party. There's a lot of sports, and I'm ashamed of myself when I don't know these things. But yes, Ron Artest's real name is now Meta World Peace. It's so ridiculous. He is Terrell Owens or the Chet. I think he acts like the Terrell Owens. Nah, I guess he is more like the Chad Ochocinco of football, obviously personality-wise. and obviously changing names. It actually almost makes Chad Ochocinco seem sane with that name, but there is no more Ron Artest. There is a bit of world peace, and the back of his jersey says world peace. It's kind of weird. Anyways, going back to their starting lineup, I think this is, well, these are the five main players. Derek Fisher is 38 years old. Kobe Bryant is 33. I mean, you could just tell he's lost a step. Pau Gasol, 31. Meta World Peace is 32. And Andrew Bynum, like I said, is 24. So it's not as old as the Mavericks, maybe as the Spurs, but still an old team. And, you know, a team like the Thunder, wow, they're a young team. I think one player in the Thunder was born in the 70s. And these couple teams I mentioned, like seven or eight players were born in the 70s, so they're at least 30-plus. It's a very interesting to look at. Yeah, they lost Odom. They almost got Paul, honestly. I credit them for that. You know, you really can't anticipate a veto, you know, from the commissioner, which is what happened. So they almost had him. It would have really made the team a lot better. You would have substituted a 38-year-old point guard and Derek Fisher to a, I want to say, 27, 26-year-old point guard to Chris Paul, who's got tons of life in him. But they didn't get him, and they haven't got anybody, really. They have not gained, and they lost out. And big part of that is, you know, what are they going to do with the new salary cap? That's not 1% anymore. It's going to be 4%. They can't afford these players, and that's one of the reasons why they lost Odom, because they couldn't afford him. You know, a guy like that, maybe he's not worth $15 million a year, but with the contracts, I mean, that's what they were going to probably be paying. I mean, it's a lot of money. So, you know, it's affecting these big market teams. So we'll see what happens with the future of that franchise. It's like I said, Kobe's getting older, and he's just not the same. You know, he has no chance of winning MVP this year. He's going to be great. I mean, you're so used to him being a superstar that he's not anymore. He's still a good player. But I think to win a championship, they don't have it. The Thunder, like I said, very young team. Kevin Durant, best scorer in the league. And I think the Thunder, top three at least, they have really good chemistry. And that's what you need at home. That place is rocking. It's a little town in Oklahoma City, but they got a lot of fans. And, you know, I just think they're going to be first by a lot. Spurs, Lakers, Mavericks are just too old. Clippers are the only team that I think can run with them, but it just seems like they're last year's Knicks. You know, you saw the play that they had, but they didn't do anything just because of getting everybody together so soon. With the lockout, the Clippers really couldn't practice, you know. Their first preseason game was basically the first time they ever played together. And, you know, the Heat did the same thing last year as well, but they had they had the ultimate trio. You know, they had three superstars. The Clippers have definitely a good squad. But the Heat also assembled their team without a lockout. They were able to practice a lot longer. So that's why the Heat did a lot better last year than the Knicks. Knicks obviously did their midseason. That was horrible. They're never going to create chemistry. But they were doing it for the future and this year. And I think you could tell that the Knicks are definitely a good team this year. But like I said, the Clippers, a great team, to be honest with you. CP3, Chauncey Billups, who will play a lot of the two guard. Caron Butler, Blake Griffin, I think, is a superstar. Just his power. And DeAndre Jordan, they got him back. He's a very, very tall athletic center and can do a lot of things, blocking shots, playing defense, very athletic. So it's a good thing they got him back. I think that's a good team. And, yes, they're not – I mean, the teams like the Lakers, the Mavericks, and the Spurs, they have great chemistry, but they're also old. So, you know, it's one way or the other. Teams like the Thunder and the Heat have both. You know, they're young and they're fast and they have chemistry, you know. But these guys, maybe not as much chemistry as those teams, but they're younger and they're faster and they're stronger. So I think as the season goes on, they're gradually get better than them. So I'll talk about the Celtics. I kind of talked about the old teams in the West. Old teams in the East, definitely the Celtics, the team to talk about. Just really haven't changed anybody. They're an old team. The only reason they have a chance is Rondo. You know, they just need those other older guys, Ray Allen, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, who is still injured, who will be back pretty soon. At least the point guard's young, and he can do all the moving around and passing, but still, just an old team. And I just don't think they can compete in a normal league where they used to have without all these big teams coming together. Maybe they had a chance, but not this year. Not in the 7-game series in the playoffs. I just don't think they have it. But I still think they'll be in the top four just because I still think they're better than a lot of teams. But to talk about title contenders, they're not going for it. And we'll talk about the other team, though. The Bulls are, you know, a very, very good team. I just looked at last year in the playoffs and the Heat. You know, they took it to them. And I just don't think – I think the Heat have gotten so much better. And just doing the math in my head, there's just no way that the Bulls are better than the Heat. So I just think, you know, the Heat are okay, but I think the number two seed, no question, is the Bulls. You know, Luol Deng, Taj Gibson, Rip Hamilton, and Kyle Korver, you know, are pretty good supporting cast for Boozer, Noah, and Rose. I think those three are very good players. So look for them to definitely have a great year. It's just so tough to know how other teams are going to play and fill in those 8 spots. But definitely the top three. Not top two will be the Heat and the Bulls. The Knicks and the Celtics, I don't know what's going to happen. They played Christmas Day, and the Knicks won. It was a really close game. Celtics actually, they were playing in Madison Square Garden. Celtics may have played a little better, but the Knicks were able to kind of get that home crowd into it and win, pull one out at the end. So two totally different teams, but I think not too far away in talent and just how they're going to finish. I don't know what's going to happen, but those two I think are fighting with the third and fourth spot in my mind, and we'll see how the teams progress. It's just too early for me to sit here and tell you how their teams are because I just don't know. I have to watch them and see how they're doing. A lot of coaches have been changed, and a few players have been changed as well. And finally, the Heat, obviously, honestly, I don't know how many games you're going to win. You know, the first two games I thought they won pretty easily. Celtics gave them a close scare. He pretty much had to leave the whole game. So this game came back really late and got him 2 points, but rookie Norris Cole came in and took care of the game for him. And yesterday they actually had a really, really close game. They're down 16 points twice. They're down 15 and a half, but they came back and they locked down on defense. Defensively, the Heat are the best I've ever seen, maybe ever. And their defense is just outstanding. They're starting players, Mario Chalmers, Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, Chris Bosh, and Joel Anthony. And their bench, honestly, they're a deep team. Shane Battier, Udonis Haslam, Norris Cole, Juwan Howard, and James Jones so far have made a big impact in the 3 games. And that's huge. I don't see a flaw. I mean, they have every thing that you need in the team. You know, they have a point guard. And, you know, you don't have a Chris Paul, but they have the other guys that can also be a point guard. You know, LeBron James and Dwayne Wade can also be a point guard alongside Chalmers. Like I said, Norris Cole stepped up. So their point is fine. Their strength, their speed, their defense, coaching, Spoelstra has been great. Big man, I mean, Joel doesn't need a score, but he's playing great defensively with Bosch as well. Bosch took over yesterday. It was just great, great team. The Heat came back and won last night. They got to bed, I guess, pretty early. It was like 4 a.m. when they got to Charlotte and went to sleep. They're saying maybe they had a little to do with it. But, like I said, there are other good teams out there. So the Heat need to just, you know, they're going to, it's hard to stay focused during every game, but they came back and won. So good coaching and good determination, good confidence. And let's talk about top 3 plays of the season. And I'll say that they all did come from last night's game. Just a great game. A lot to watch. I will say a lot of these Heat fans are a little questionable about playing the Celtics. I must have seen 20 statuses on Facebook saying, go Heat, blah, blah. Yesterday, I think I saw one. So I don't know if they didn't know the ball. They were playing the Bobcats. Everybody needs to know your team's playing almost every night. because of the condensed season. They pack these games in. So let's just kick it off really quick. And here is the third best play so far of the Heat season.
Throwback Wade. Wade floater off the glass. Spaghetti boards to miss. Bobcats break out. Don't have numbers. Spaghetti, no. Blocked by Bosch. Saved by James. Wade will get a breakaway. What a play.
Yeah, that was a crazy play, and it actually ended up being the big three that took care of that. Within a matter of 5 seconds, Bosch blocked a fast break. Going out of bounds, LeBron was right there. He had one foot in. He just launched it down court, laying into the into the stands. And it was luckily Wade was on the break, and he got a perfect pass by LeBron, set him up for an easy dunk. And I think a big part of the game is those things. You know, when you have a fast break for the Bobcats, they don't score, and then just like that, we score. It's a huge momentum swing. And here's play two.
James to Wade, and here we go.
ISO.
Gets in the lane, backs up, puts it up, and in. 2.9 left to go. The Bobcats have a 20 left. Wade gives the Superman symbol to Cam Newton.
That was play number two. And here is play number one.
James with the ball at the top. McGinney trying to stay with him. Back to Bosch. Head fake, dribble drive, dunk! DJ White on the foul.
Morris Diaw bites at the ball fake, and Bosch strong to the rim. You normally don't see him go that strong.
Yep, that was a great play. And here's what I predict. You can always predict something. And obviously I'm basing this on what I thought they were before the season and how they played so far. And, you know, I just want to bear in mind that with the lockouts, you can't practice. And there's only two preseason games. And even if your team has been together, you know, that doesn't mean that you're going to play very good to start off the season. And, you know, a couple of teams like the Lakers just didn't have Andrew Bynum. So that's a big part of their offense. That's a 24-year-old center that can do a lot of things that they didn't have. But just from what I've seen here in my predictions, they're not going to be too far off from this. But a lot of things can change. A lot of things can happen. Dwight Howard can still go somewhere and make a big impact. But here's the seven teams I was talking about. The Heat, I think, will go 60-6. The Thunder, I think, will be 56-10. The Mavericks, I believe, will be 45-21. The Spurs, I think, will be 47-19. The Bulls, I believe, are going to be 57-9 with the second best record in the NBA. Mostly due to the length, the scheduling of the East. But I think, you know, Thunder Bulls will be very close. And I think the Clippers will be 47-19. So if the Heat do finish with the best record and go to the finals, they will have home field advantage. Home field advantage does go to the team with the best record. And we'll see how that pans out. A lot kind of talking far in the future, but why not? This is the Southernmost Sports Rap, and there are no boundaries. And that kind of sums it up for the NBA. I actually got by to half past the hour without talking about hockey. So kudos, but there's a lot to talk about. So we have a whole second half to talk about. And just really quick, I'm watching ESPN, and I will get into the bowl games as well after my stat of the week. Bowl game on right now. RG3, Robert Griffin III, Heisman Trophy winner, is on ESPN right now. Check him out. It's a high-scoring game, 35-20. It was 35-21 at halftime, I believe. Washington was actually up. Everybody kind of thought Baylor. I mean, they're putting up points. Can't really fault Robert Griffin III. 9:09 left in the third quarter, and Baylor has 31 points, but they're down 42-31 to Washington. Baylor ranked 12th, Washington not ranked. And the Baylor has the ball, and they're going up the field. So just an interesting game. If you guys are watching anything, definitely check out the Heisman Trophy winner. He wasn't the Heisman Trophy winner for no reason whatsoever. He was actually a really, really exciting player, put up a lot of stats. But without further ado, let's kick it out with the stat of the week. Out of the week time. Normally I have, you know, just an interesting stat to say, but this is actually an extended interesting stat tonight. Let's talk about Cam Newton. Seems like every week he's breaking another record, and it is true. He broke another record last week. And let's talk about the records he did break this year so far. Cam Newton, obviously, a quarterback, first year from Auburn. He actually learned that he only played one full year of college. He backed up he backed up Tebow for at least 1 year. He backed up at 4-2, had a year off, and he just played 1 year at Auburn and just won the Heisman, won the championship. Just what a turnaround. And then in 1 year in football, he's become a star. And here are the records that he has broken so far. 34 total touchdowns as a rookie. A lot of those rushing touchdowns, just crazy. He just broke Peyton Manning's record, rookie record, passing yards. He now has 3,893 and has a great chance of getting into 4,000 yardage range this week against the Saints. Most passing yards in the first two games of the season. He had a total 854, outstanding. Most passing yards of a single game in a second game, 432. He was the first rookie in NFL history to throw for 10 touchdowns and run for 10 touchdowns in a season. Fastest player to throw for 1,000 yards, did that in three games. First quarterback in NFL history to pass for more than 400 yards in the first two games. Yeah, it's interesting. First game of the year, I mean, you know, it happens. Is it a fluke? He just came out the next game and had more passing yards, so it was crazy. He's had a fantastic year. He was at the Heat game last night, and when D-Wade hit the final shot to take the lead with about 3 seconds left, Wade looked at him courtside and did the Superman, which is the famous touchdown dance that he does. So this is kind of cool, actually. Stars from different sports kind of having some fun. So I thought it was kind of cool. And that is my stat of the week. And good time, good stat. It kind of brings me into the football scene. And let's talk about football. And I do have my award ceremony going out right now. I have about 10 awards going out to the players. And it's pretty solid awards. And let's start off with my MVP. Everybody, you know what, this is going to go to Aaron Rodgers, NFL reality-wise. You know, that's what everybody's saying. But I'm giving it to Drew Brees. I mean, the guy just passed Dan Marino's all-time single-season mark from 1984. He just passed that with one game to go. He has 5,085 passing yards this year. 37 touchdowns, 11 picks. I have the from last week's stats. I didn't realize that until just now. I know from last week's stats he now has 5,085 passing yards. I believe he has now about 40 touchdowns. I think he has 13 picks. What a great year. And you know what? You know, they only have two more losses than the Packers. I don't know why he would. I mean, that would be if they were undefeated, the Packers, I think. Maybe give it to Rodgers. I just think, you know, the Saints wouldn't be anywhere without Brees, just like the Packers wouldn't be anywhere without Rodgers. They're both very equal players. They're both very deserving. I just personally think a guy like Brees just setting the mark and just having a great year with the passing yards, I mean, you got to give it to him. But, you know, he's on pace for 5,463. Just crazy. So that's just my theory. I think Drew Brees should be the MVP of the league, but from what I hear, they're going to give it to Aaron Rodgers from the Packers. But still another game to go. Rob, Packers lose another game. It's only one game difference. I don't know. We'll see. Rookie of the Year, obviously Cam Newton just told you all the records that he's broken. 3,722 passing yards. That was the week before stats. I guess NFL.com didn't decide to update the stats. But I already told you how many he had. And he's on pace for around 4,300 yards. 17 passing touchdowns, 13 rushing touchdowns. He's very equal, very evenly dispersed. 609 yards rushing on the ground. Comeback player of the year, I have Steve Smith. Before last game, he had 1,300 receiving yards. That was only in 14 games. Last year, he played 14 games and only had 554 receiving yards. Obviously, Cam Newton, a big help for that. But, you know, that's 800 yards difference than last year. Clearly, that wasn't all Cam. That was Steve Smith really stepping it up and having a huge turnaround. I can't name another receiver on that team. So, you know, obviously, they're double-teaming him, and he's still doing great. He had 6 touchdowns as of last week, and he only had 2 last year. So just a great year for him. And you know what? It is a great year for the Panthers. There's so much life. And as a fan having such a bad year last year, they're at least exciting to watch. And you know that the best is still going to come. They're going to get better. And, you know, it's just fun to watch. Most surprising player award, I'm going to give to Tim Tebow. Started 3 games last year, 1-2. He has played, he's played 10 games this year. He's 7-3 as a starter. And he's a great shot to make it to the playoffs. Turn this team around. No stats to really talk about. You know, everybody's talking about he didn't get selected to the Pro Bowl. Well, no, he's not, you know, of course not, with his stats. I mean, you know, I understand that the Pro Bowl really wasn't meant for a Tebow, you know. The Pro Bowl's meant for fun players to watch and just have great stats. Tebow's really meant for serious games. If there was a serious Pro Bowl, I think you would put Tebow as a starting quarterback. But that's not the case. Really quick, going back into my NFL, was kind of weird little input there. Talk about, you know, my award ceremonies and then talk about hockey, but it's all good. And just really quick, I was talking about Tim Tebow, right? My most surprising player of the world. Most surprising player award. Like I said, last year, not so good. This year, he just shocked everybody. The Broncos, I mean, not to say a lot of teams haven't been really consistent this year. But the Broncos, where they were at before Tebow came in, I had a lot of doubts. But he came back, and he's a winner. And, yeah, he's, like I said, 7-3 so far this year, and he's about to make the playoffs. And I credit that also to the lack of talent I see in the AFC West. But definitely a great year for the Broncos, and it's not over. They still have to take care of business on Sunday, but they should, and I look forward to seeing them in the playoffs this year. I'm not sure how far they're going to go, but it'd definitely be a big accomplishment for the Broncos. My most disappointing player award goes to Chris Johnson. Before last week, he only had 930 yards on pace for 1,063. And he had 2,006 yards in 2009, not too long ago. And he finally gets a big contract, and he barely gets 1,000. I just think it's very disappointing. Titans, although still have a decent chance of making the playoffs with one game to go, so he may have a second redemption if he gets to play in the playoffs and he plays great. He has been having a good second half, and we'll see if he can turn it around and maybe have a good playoffs or have a good next year at least. Still a young player, still the fast running back in the league. Most surprising team, definitely the 49ers, 11-3. They clinched the division a month ago, and they haven't given up a rush touchdown all season except for last season. They gave it 1 to Marshawn Lynch, but still 1 is just incredible. Currently second in the NFC, should have a locked up playing the Rams this week, and should have home field advantage, not at least
well, not home field, but a first round bye. So with their defense, it's really honestly, it really is a truth. Defense wins games. So their defense is staggering. I don't see them beating the Packers or the Saints, but you know what? As history will tell you, they have a great shot at it. So we'll see what happens with that. Most disappointed team, no question, the Eagles. I think if there were a couple more games left, they would have gotten in the playoffs. Because I, as of right now, I think they're a better team than the Cowboys and the Giants. But like I said, it's too little too late. They're 6-8. Prior to last week, they won. So they're 7-8. Have a chance to finish at 500. But obviously, everybody's projecting 13, 14 wins. They lost to the Bills, the 49ers, the Giants, the Falcons, the Bears, Cardinals, Patriots, and the Seahawks. A couple good teams, a couple of bad teams. Shouldn't have lost all those games. But better luck next year. They could have actually gotten in the playoffs, surprisingly. They had a shot at it last week, but stuff didn't go their way. So that's what happens when you kind of hang by a thread with two games to go. Best kicker award goes to Matt Prater, who actually did not make the Pro Bowl. I think he made it as an alternate. Sebastian Janikowski made it. I can't really fault that. I think Matt Prater had a much better year, much more impactful year with his leg. But I think Janikowski deserves it because of the fact that he actually has not made a Pro Bowl selection ever. I am astonished by that when I heard it, but I think the fact that he has not achieved a Pro Bowl selection yet, I say give it to Janikowski. He's had a much better career and much more deserving. But Matt Prater definitely has Pro Bowl insight as a starter for sure. What a year he's had. He's just as important as Tebow for the Broncos team. Without Prater, they would have not have won that many games. And my coach of the year, my midseason coach of the year was not Jim Harbaugh. It was a coach over there for Cincinnati because of the fact that I thought he had a lot, Marvin Lewis, he had a lot less people to work with. But I'm giving it to Jim Harbaugh. I realized that he really didn't have too much to work with either, and he still, if you look at both those teams now, it's a big difference on the 49ers with 13 wins, just an incredible year. And have a great shot at the Super Bowl. And here's the scenarios right now. For the NFL, the only team that has clinched the number one spot is the Packers. They have the number one spot in the NFC. In the AFC, the Patriots have the top spot, but it's not guaranteed. The Ravens can win this week, and the Patriots will lose. The Ravens will have the number one spot. If the Pats win versus the Bills, they have it wrapped up. In the NFC, we'll discuss that right now. Like I said, the 49ers are the number two seed. If they lose and the Saints win, then the Saints would now be the second seed. But I don't see, there's no way in hell the 49ers lose to the Rams. So that should be an easy one. And the Saints should probably, they're probably not going to play Breeze that much. I think Carolina beats them this week. Anyways, so we'll see what happens with that. And I think the Saints will lock up the third seed. And the fourth seed is down to one last game of the season, the Giants and the Cowboys for that NFC East title. I believe the Giants will win that one, but it's anybody's game. For the wild cards wrapped up, it is the Lions and the Falcons. And it still can change. Falcons have the tiebreaker, but are currently a game back. So if the Lions lose against the Packers this week, and the Falcons win, I believe the Falcons would then be the fifth seed. And it's a big difference. I think the Falcons will play tough this week. If they win and, you know, if they can get that fifth seed, whoever's fifth seed is going to be playing the Giants or the Eagles. The Giants or the Cowboys. If you're the sixth seed, you are then playing either the Saints or the Niners. There's a big difference there. In the AFC, like I said, the Ravens and the Patriots still battling for that first seed. The Steelers could also get a first-round bye. They can take over that second seed if they win and the Ravens lose. So that's also a possibility. A lot of ways the Ravens can go. The Ravens can be the first seed or the fifth seed or the fourth seed. a lot of difference, a lot of places they could be. And that's all due to, you know, just the fact that division is always big. A lot of wins, but there's only enough room for one division winner, and the rest goes to the wild card. So we'll see what happens. Currently now, second, the Ravens. Third spot is locked up for the Texans, and the fourth spot either will go to the Raiders or the Broncos. If the Broncos win, they are in. If they lose and the Raiders win, then the Raiders are in. If both of them lose, then the Denver still hangs out of that fourth spot and makes it in the postseason. As wild card spots, first spot is locked up. It's either going to be the Ravens or the Steelers, depending on how the games play out this week. And the last spot is up for grabs. Very interesting. A lot of teams can make this spot. So here's what's going to happen. Five potential teams could make that sixth spot. All right. The most likely, I think, are the Bengals. Now, the Bengals have a game lead, but I think if they lose, there's no way they get in. They have to win. But if they win, that's it. They just have to win and they're in because they have a game lead on everybody else. They do host the Ravens. Like I said, the Ravens have a lot to fight for, but they are in the playoffs. I don't know what's going to happen here. I predicted Bengals to win that, so I think that they will get that. But if the Bengals lose, then the next in line is the Titans. Titans are playing the Texans this week, so I think the Titans win. I think they win this week. So if the Bengals lose, I think the Titans get that sixth spot. Now, if the Titans lose to the Texans, which is possible, then the Jets have a shot at it. Now, the Jets have to go down and play Miami, and I do not think that that's going to be an easy game to win. So then that's the Jets thing. Now, if all three of them lose, well, no, actually, the Jets are fourth in line. If the Jets basically have the worst odds to make it. If both of the AFC West teams win, if the Raiders win and the Broncos win, the Broncos go to the playoffs as the fourth seed, the AFC West champions. The Raiders are still alive. The Raiders are now third in line for that wild card spot. And if the Titans lose and the Bengals lose, yes, the Raiders will then get that sixth spot. And if the Raiders lose, basically the Jets need both of those teams. The Jets need the Bengals and the Titans both to lose. And they need either the Raiders or the Broncos to lose. If both of those player teams win, then the Jets cannot make it in. So the Jets are fourth in line. Jets need Titans to lose, Bengals to lose, and either one of those AFC West teams to lose, and the Jets are then in. So that's how it looks like. Those five teams have a chance. So we'll see how that plays out this week. It's pretty simple in the NFC, just the fourth seed pretty much is the only thing decided. I think the Giants are going to take that one. But I think it's a good time to get into my predictions. Here they are. Here's my picks. Detroit wins 31-20 at Green Bay. Green Bay is not going to be playing anybody. Detroit has enough to play for, and I think that they're definitely want to get revenge on Green Bay, and I think they want to win. San Francisco at St. Louis. A big season for San Fran. They're not going to ruin it by losing to the Rams. I think they win 25-10. The Jets at Miami. Jason Taylor's last game as an NFL player. He played a season at the Jets. Longtime Dolphin. He wants to play a great game. Wants to hit Sanchez. Dolphins are just a better team than the Jets right now. At home, 35-17 Miami. The Chicago Bears at the Minnesota Vikings. I think the Vikings win at home, 35-20. Buffalo at New England. I think New England still has enough to play for. They know that there's a bunch of hard teams. With the Ravens playing the Bengals, who they already beat this year. You know, if they win that game, New England has to win, or they got to be the second seed, and that's big, because then they go to the AFC Championship game. They don't want to be on the road, especially when it's a team like the Ravens or the Steelers. They know they got to be at home. It's a big game for them, and they got to win that. So I think they beat Buffalo 31-20. Carolina at New Orleans. I don't think New Orleans plays that hard. Carolina's a young team. They want to win. I think Carolina wins 35-20. New Orleans is going to realize that they're not going to move down any. And they know the 49ers aren't going to lose to the Rams. So I think they know that winning or losing, they're going to be in the same spot. So I think they play mediocre and Carolina wins 35-20. Washington at Philly. Philly's trying to salvage their season. I don't think they want to at least, if they can win this game, they're 500. That's much better than people were thinking as they saw them throughout the season. So I think Philly wins easy 31-13. Indy at Jacksonville. Indy, I know you won two in a row, but those were at home. I think on the road at Jacksonville, I think Jacksonville gets a win. They have the top rusher in the league with Mojo, and I think they win 23-20. Tennessee at Houston. I just got to pick Tennessee. They have too much to play for, and Houston just lost to the Colts, and they have no reason to really start anybody big and play that hard. I think Tennessee wins 31-20. Give them a great shot to make the playoffs. Tampa Bay at Atlanta. I think Atlanta wins easy. They're 27-13, like I said. You know, Detroit's playing Green Bay. Possibility that Detroit could lose. And Atlanta wants to win that game so they can play, you know, the Giants or the Cowboys instead of, you know, the Saints in the first round. So I think they do play tough, but they're in the playoffs either way. Baltimore at Cincy. This is my upset. I think both those teams are going to play hard. I think Baltimore has enough to play for, enough incentive. You know, I think they know that the Bills can beat the Pats. The Bills obviously beat them earlier in the season. Not playing great, but the Bills just scored 40 on the Broncos last week. So I think Baltimore knows if they win, they have a chance to get that first seed. And if they win, they can stay out of the wild card and get that second seed. Big difference. So with their old players, they definitely want to get some rest. I just don't know how much harder they're going to be playing than Cincy. I think Cincy at home needs to win this. They know they have to win. If they lose, I mean, they're good right now, but that's only if they win. If they lose, they have too much rolling against them. I think Cincinnati gets it, 27-20. I hope they do. Out of all those teams fighting for it, I like Cincinnati. I like their team. If without being stuck in a tough division, I think they would have already been clinching, but they've had to play some tough teams. Pittsburgh at Cleveland. I think Pittsburgh wins 27-20. I just heard that Roethlisberger is going to play it, so I would now pick the Pittsburgh. I had Cleveland winning, but with Pittsburgh and Ben Roethlisberger in their defense, I think Pittsburgh is going to pull away with that win, knowing that they have a lot of opportunities with the win there. Kansas City at Denver. Denver wins 23-10. I know Tebow's had his ups and downs and lost big last week, but there's one thing that you can count on him to do is to turn around quickly and win games. So I think that they have to win to get in for the most part. So I think they win 23-10 at home to, I guess, the Chiefs. But good story there, Kyle Orton coming back to the team that kicked him out, and he has a chance to kick them out of the playoffs. So it'll be an interesting game to watch. Definitely one of the games of the week. San Diego at Oakland. Even if Denver loses, I think they're in because I think San Diego beats Oakland. San Diego, I think, will win 31-20. I think San Diego is a better team than Oakland. And McFadden is questionable, but they said he probably won't play. He should play in the playoffs if they end up reaching it. But like I said, a lot of times there's no counting anybody out anymore. Those teams are losing and winning all the time. It's just really tough to say who's in, who's out. That's my prediction. San Diego beats Oakland. Denver's in. Seattle and Arizona, two teams that actually were still in the hunt last week, surprisingly. Two teams from the NFC West. Two very young teams, two alike teams. I think Arizona wins at home, though, 33-24. Looks for both these teams to make big impacts next year with their youth and their speed. And I think right now they're a playoff team as far as how they play. They just had a really rough start. And the game of the week is the Dallas Cowboys at the Giants. I have yet to hear any analysts say that the Cowboys are going to win, and I don't think they're going to win either. I think the Giants win easily, 37-23. They're just a better team all around, especially with the fact that DeMarco Murray is out for the year. New York's just a better defensive team, offensive team, Victor Cruz, Eli Manning, especially at the end of the game, you want Eli and you don't want Romo. So I just think it's going to be an easy game for the Giants. But both teams are very inconsistent, and I think that it's still a game worth watching, and I wouldn't count anybody out. And I would bet, I guess, but that it's no gimme. So here are my final projected standings after what I just read you. If everything comes true, the 13-3 for the Pats. Pats, Steelers would actually get that second seed at 12-4. Texans, 10-6. The Broncos, 10-6, will be in the playoffs. Steelers, 12-4. Texans, 10-6. And Broncos, 10-6. Ravens will then move to the wild card spot. And the Bengals, after beating them, will be in the sixth spot, at 10-6. In the NFC, Green Bay, I think they will lose. I think it'll be 14-2 with the first seed. 49ers will win at 13-3. And the Saints lose. I think they will be 12-4 in the third seed. The Giants win against the Cowboys will be 9-7. Lions, I believe, will be 11-5, and the Falcons are 10-6 after they win. So I think they both win. Lions stole the game. Above them will obviously be the fifth seed and face the Giants in the first round. And this gets into my top 10 plays of the year for the NFL. And let's kick it off really quick. This is a young man named Devin Hester. I'm sure you guys are all very aware of who he is. And here it is.
What a punt.
Great
by Malone.
Punt.
All the way back to the 18. But another good return by Hester. Crossing the 40. And again, it's Malone who had a hand on him. Couldn't get him out of bounds. And Hester will pick it the distance.
He's had a great year, and he now is the all-time kick return leader for touchdowns. So that was my number 10 play of the NFL season this year. And just kicking off to my number 9 play, this is one of the most important plays that I think is on my list for the team. This is Torrey Smith against the Steelers. I believe it was Sunday Night Football.
With wide right, lead wide left. Flacco again protected well. To the end zone, he goes, and it's caught for the touchdown by Torrey Smith. And there's a flag down at the 2-yard line for defensive interference. That will hold up, and with 8 seconds left, the Ravens will conclude a 92-yard drive with a touchdown.
Yep, just a great play. But Torrey Smith and the Ravens won a huge game. Now with the tiebreaker against the Steelers, which is a decent possibility they tie. So we'll see what happens with that. At number 8, here is the myth, the man, the legend, Cam Newton.
On the third down, here comes the blitz. Newton puts it up. He's got a man, and he completes it. Steve Smith is going all the way. Touchdown, Carolina. 77 yards. Cam Newton's first touchdown pass of the NFL.
Yep, Cam Newton, just his first touchdown, and he had many more to come. And here's number 7. This was a great play, honestly. This is the Texans, and here it is.
20. Job rolling right. Job throwing has a wide open Jacoby Jones, and he has a lot of room. Jacoby Jones goes all the way on the first play of the game.
As against the Bucks, no surprise, but yeah, I just thought that was a cool play. First play of the game, 80 yards, touchdown. Very exciting. Reggie Bush is going to make my top 6 play. This was a great game for him. 203 rushing yards on the day, capped off by
Bush. Players, the fullback, and Reggie Bush with a big hole, hurdling an offender, and there he goes! And the dagger for the Miami Dolphins! Reggie
coming up from Incognito,
yes, sir.
With a break.
Obviously, I'm a huge Dolphins fan, so it was a really exhilarating play. Like, won the game, and just, like I said, how many rushing yards that accumulated because of that play was just amazing. So, now we get into our top five plays. I talked about him earlier, Victor Cruz. Should have made the Pro Bowl, and he said he might. But here it is. This is Victor Cruz in one of those first touchdowns.
Batting on 3rd and 2. And the pass is caught for a first down, and Victor Cruz breaks free into Eagles territory, and he's still going. Victor Cruz is in for the touchdown. 74 yards.
Yeah, I don't know where he came from, but he is just... I'm not trying to be the hugest Victor Cruz fan in the world, but he's just a great player and definitely the reason the Giants are in this position. So it's a good thing they got him. He's very, very good. And let's talk about another very good wide receiver. How about Wes Welker in the first game of the season? It was against the Dolphins, but hey, I know excellence when I see it. He's my top four play of the NFL season.
And that right there. And that's a head scratcher from that close, from a half yard out.
Low percentage throw as well, Mike. And then he's got to give his receiver a chance.
Well, he's Brady out of the gun from the half-yard line. Why not? To Wes Welker. Wes Welker pulling away. And he ties an NFL record with a 99-yard touchdown.
Oh, my.
How many guys throw it out of their end zone in an empty backfield?
As Don Meredith said when Tony Dorsett did it, 99 yards and a half.
Yeah, it's incredible. Him and Brady are just unreal when it comes to throwing the ball and continuing doing their thing. They've been doing it all year long. Wes Welker now leading the league in receiving yards. Not a big surprise. Tom Brady 3rd in passing yards. And obviously that play had a huge impact on it. And here's 3. I think this is the most exciting play just because of what team it was. That's right. It was the Indianapolis Colts in their first win. And I have to say, this was a play they got in their first win. It's Donald Brown. First play of the drive at the 20-yard line. Let's see what he does.
As a quarterback in the NFL where he's actually played in the game and thrown a pass. Donald Brown breaking free initially. And Brown off to the races. Donald Brown down the sideline. He's gone. Touchdown, Indianapolis.
No flag. Put it on the board.
Yeah, I know I can't show you, but yeah, some of these plays, are just once you see it, it's amazing. And that was just a great run. Should have been tackled behind the line of scrimmage, but kept going and gave him a 2-touchdown lead with like 5 minutes left. Great play. And here's my top 2 plays. This play pretty much belongs to, I think, the most exciting game of the year. Denver Broncos, of course, and, a game they should have lost, but they hang in there. They hung in there, and the first field goal he hit in this game was a 59-yarder to bring it to overtime. But in overtime, they got a turnover, and here is the field goal by Matt Prater in overtime to win the game.
From the left hash, Matt Prater from 51 yards out for the win. The kick is good.
Yeah, that was an amazing game. I'm not a Broncos fan, but, man, it is fun to root for Tebow. Great guy, you know. He doesn't do anything wrong. He just wants to win. And it's just interesting to see how he does it. And that was just one of the more classic finishes that he's had. He's done it all year long. And like I said, thanks to Matt Prater, he's saved Tebow's ass all year. And here is probably the most interesting play I've seen all year. Just like who wins the game on a return touchdown. Well, this guy does. Patrick Peterson for the Arizona Cardinals.
Good high kick. Peterson looks around. Backpedals, takes it at the 2. Trying to get outside. Turns it upfield. Patrick Peterson gets by the punter. Peterson may go all the way. He will. Patrick Peterson wins it for
for the Cardinals. The incredible rookie, Patrick Peterson, with his third punt return for a touchdown this season. That one, 99 yards.
Just a great play. And I have a bonus play for you, and I'll end the show with that. A play that kind of happened really lately. I think you all know which play that was. And I will definitely play it, and I will not mind putting that as a top 10, probably the top play. So just imagine there are 11 plays. And the play I will play for you right will be the number one play. Kind of just to sum up the entire NFL season, it was just a great, great play. And we'll get to that in a minute. Just really quick, just moving into my final thought. Victor Cruz didn't go to a Pro Bowl game. 1,358 receiving yards, second in the NFC. Like I said before, I just kind of thought that he should have deserved it. But a lot of times people don't really play. So I think eventually he'll be there in Honolulu. London Fletcher did not go to the Pro Bowl as well. He finished first in the NFL in tackles, 162. I just thought that was kind of rough. And, you know, a lot of people saying Stafford. Realistically, he'll go because the team that goes to the Super Bowl and the NFC, they're not going to play in the Pro Bowl. And, you know, three of those quarterbacks most likely are in the playoffs, two of them being Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers. I think, you know, one of them is going to be there. So it'll open up another spot, and Stafford will get it. It's just he's fourth in the NFC in passing yards, so it's not really a huge shock that he wasn't in there, although obviously with the season he had, you know, why not? But, yeah, he will most likely go eventually. And also, this would have been my stat of the week, but I'm going to make it as my final thought of the week. I talked about it earlier. Drew Brees passes Dan Marino for 5,084 yards in the single season. It was a 10-yard pass to Darren Sproles. You know, about 3 weeks ago, so I was thinking about those two stats, that stat and the Packers' perfect season possibilities. And I guess if I had to choose, I'm glad that the Packers lost. Drew Brees is a great guy. No, nothing against him. He's 6 foot at best. And, you know, he's playing quarterback when you need to be tall, and he's proving that he could be the best quarterback, at least top five all time, and he's proving it, you know, and it's great to see him. He's a great guy, and he works hard, and he deserves it. And a guy that's fighting for his contract to be renewed, and yet he can't get that with the season he's having. It's an amazing year for him. And I just thought that was really great that he did that. I mean, I just knew he was for a few weeks now. He was way too close. And at least he's got another game to make the record even more fascinating. And with that, I'm going to say that's about it. So I have you guys today. Just want to say I will be Sunday morning. If you guys want to hear more NFL talk, I will have my injury reports. I think everybody's fantasy should be done right now. I mean, I'm a commissioner for two leagues. And I always try to schedule my championship to at least be the week before last, because the last week is ridiculous. Some teams really don't play their star players, and that's not fair. But if there is, I'll be sure to have my injury reports up there for you. And just a lot of stuff to talk about. Hope to have probably an hour-long show, maybe. And it should be a fun one. It's always fun to go in the last week of the NFL season and see what's going on. So we'll get into that. Sunday morning, it'll be noon to 1 next week, Tuesday night. I believe it's at 9:30, maybe at 10 o'clock, the Dread of Sports Talk with Captain Frank and Dread, Evil Rob and his trusty first mate, Ken, and I'll be right back at it next Thursday night, 11 o'clock, with the Southern Most Sports Rep, and I'll have a lot more stuff to talk about the NBA, and I'll start having some top I'll definitely start getting some top plays with the NBA in it as well. And, of course, also, I will talk about, you know, the playoff seedings and whatnot. It should be fun, a lot to watch. And, you know, it's really, you know, all I can do is sit here and tell you what I think is going to happen. But, and truth be told, anything can happen. So it should be fun.
and we'll see what happens. And I'll see you guys on Sunday, and I'll see you next Thursday. It's been another edition of the Sumo Sports Trap with the Zen Man. And with that, I'm out. See you guys.
And to have that kind of foot quickness and that good vision.
And the other thing he is durable. He has averaged more carries per game than any back in the NFL over the last 3.5 years. Wide open and a flick into the end zone by Jerome Simpson. Oh, goodness.
I am officially retiring from the NFL and Green Bay Packers. And
here he goes. To the 40, the 30, the 20. Touchdown, Prince.
Let me tell you what happened. I'm going to get a drop like a sack of potatoes. What crawl on the cracker later?
Freeze.
Southernmost Sports Wrap, only on KeyWestShow.com.